Hi everyone, and welcome to Pixels, a podcast for the discerning gamer. Hello everyone, and welcome back to Pixels. This is a show where we discuss the news about the video game industry and try to understand what's happening in that wonderful world of ours. I'm Patrick Beja, and with me today is Ed Mitchell. How are you doing, Ed?
Hey, doing great. It's nice and early over here on the East Coast of the US, so I'm ready to get going.
I'm waking you up super early. I feel very guilty every time.
Oh, no, it's okay. I do usually not get up for work for another hour or so, but don't feel bad about it. It's fine. It's the sacrifices I make for you and your listeners.
Oh, you're so kind. Well, I think it's going to be worth it because we have a little bit to talk about Activision Blizzard and Ubisoft and Microsoft doing weird things with the Xbox One. And of course, the one thing that I've been waiting to talk about for months, Street Fighter V is finally out, or parts of it is out. You'll get what I mean when we discuss that wonderful game. But let's start with Activision Blizzard that had their quarterly earnings meeting and call a few days ago, a couple of weeks ago. I'm not going to bore you with a lot of financial information. Basically, they're doing fine. They're having lots of money, lots of profits, lots of revenue, and everything's more or less doing great. The two things we did get out of the call were, first, big surprise, we're going to get a new Call of Duty and a new Skylanders this year. That's not going to surprise anyone. However, we got the confirmation that Destiny is not going to get a proper sequel this year. That was kind of rumored in the past few weeks, but now it's been confirmed. It is, however, going to get a full-fledged expansion. So Destiny 2, which we were expecting this year, is probably going to be delayed to, well, it is going to be delayed to 2017, probably to September, which is the set date for Destiny releases, it seems. And this year we're going to get an expansion, just like The Taken King, which was pretty well received, even though there wasn't a great follow-up. But I'm not sure how I feel about it.
I mean, I wonder how big that the 2016 expansion is going to be, because The Taken King was a big deal. It brought in a bunch of new players, I think, from all the praise that it was getting especially with the level 25 boost. And I don't know. I haven't heard. There hasn't been a lot of news on the Destiny front in the past couple of months since that new expansion came out. So I wonder how new this new expansion is going to be.
I think it's difficult to say because, yeah, certainly The Taken King fixed a lot of the things that were problematic with the initial vanilla Destiny release, but it felt like an expansion. It didn't feel like an entirely new world to explore. It was one zone, which was a great zone, fantastic zone, but after 2 or 3 months, you're done with it. And that's what a lot of the Destiny community is complaining about now. It's the live team that was supposed to be bringing new stuff all year round has been bringing very unsubstantial updates, like that silly Sparrow Racing League thing and the, Valentine's Day update, the Crimson Days, I think. Anyway, it would be good to have a Taken King caliber expansion for this year, but it's not going to be the proper, reset that everyone wants for Destiny 2. And it's sort of easy to compare it to World of Warcraft, and we've certainly done that in the past, but in World of Warcraft, when you get an expansion, it feels more substantial than what The Taken King was. An expansion in World of Warcraft has many different zones. It has, updates for all the characters, which this did, but there's only three characters, three types of classes. So anyway, I'm a Destiny player, so I'm definitely going to be getting that expansion. But I was kind of looking forward to the revamped Destiny 2 experience. It's good that they're taking their time. I'm happy about that.
Yeah.
But
I'm just hoping that the whatever Destiny 2 is, they can take the lessons that they learned from the Taken King and just make it bigger and better. So
yeah, we'll see. Exactly. Hopefully we can get like a bunch of like, I don't know, new planets, lots of new planets and new
lots
zones.
Lots of new planets, new maps, new zones, new story, all that stuff would be good.
Yeah. Ubisoft also had its revenue investors call. They're doing less well than Activision Blizzard is. I think everyone is doing less well than Activision Blizzard is. They have less money coming in, less profits. They're still hoping for a decent forecast for the whole year, given that I think they're counting a lot on Far Cry and The Division, which are coming out in Q1. Well, basically in the next couple of months. But basically, they're not doing super well. And there's a little bit of irony here, which is they decided to do the right thing by the players in not releasing an Assassin's Creed game this year. As I mentioned, they still have big releases coming this year. One unannounced, apparently. They have Watch Dogs coming before April 2017. So in the next year, there's a sequel to Watch Dogs coming. And even though Watch Dogs was sort of poorly received critically, it still sold a metric ton. It was one of the best new IP releases ever. It was a very successful game. And they have a sequel that's not been announced yet, although now they've said it's coming. But no Assassin's Creed game. And Assassin's Creed has been their yearly franchise that is making them the bulk of their money. And so investors decided that wasn't a good thing, as you know, that's what the stock market is there for. They want short-term gains, which is understandable. But that puts Ubisoft in a delicate position in relation to Vivendi, which has been trying to accrue shares from both Ubisoft and Gameloft, which are companies founded by the Guillemot brothers. They're very close. And now Vivendi has launched hostile takeover bid for Gameloft. And it's very likely that Ubisoft is going to be next. And Vivendi is kind of, ironically, Vivendi used to hold a majority stake in Blizzard. Maybe not a majority, but they owned a lot of Blizzard. And then, you know, there was the Activision Blizzard thing, and then they completely divested their shares of Blizzard. And now they went back into the video game business because they want synergies with their other properties, which are, you know, in film and entertainment in general. But usually the worry here is that Vivendi is not the kind of overlord. They're kind of the corporate overlord. So,
yeah, I mean, I think that it's a good move to not have a new Assassin's Creed game this year. The games have been selling less and less. You have in the notes about it's about like 50,000 less, if not more, every single year. Yeah.
In France.
Okay, that makes sense. I mean, Syndicate was pretty well looked at, but it definitely didn't get the kind of reviews that the Black Flag did. And Black Flag was the last Assassin's Creed that I personally played. So hopefully they can take a year off and get enough dev effort into this game to allow something new to come out of that series that hasn't been seen for a while. So.
Yeah, it's for sure. It's kind of the thing that we usually say about Assassin's Creed is they keep making the same gameplay mistakes in the game. It's like there's qualities to the game, but there are issues that are not being addressed. And it's probably a good thing that they're taking a step back. But of course, you know, the stock market is not happy about this. And that's understandable. But
yeah. I mean, I'm looking forward to whatever their new IP that they were mentioning was coming out later in the fall. Far Cry Primal comes out tomorrow in the U.S., so maybe that's something that'll be good for them. I don't know. The reviews have been kind of middling on that, so we'll see. We'll see how well that does.
Yeah, I'm not. I mean, I like Far Cry as much as the next guy. I don't know that it's going to be a huge thing. The Division is interesting. I think they're betting a lot on The Division. I've tried the open beta this weekend just a little bit. I played through the introduction mission. It was fun. I'm looking forward to trying it a little bit more. I don't know. if it's going to be, you know, there's a lot of Destiny in The Division, and I don't know that it is going to be what they hope it's going to be, which is a major, major franchise.
Yeah, I mean, I played it at PAX Prime back in August, and it was a lot of fun. So maybe I'm willing to give it another try. But it just didn't seem like something that's going to capture me. It seemed very bland looking and stuff like that. So it didn't really seem like something that would really blow my socks off. So we'll see.
Yeah, I think there are going to be people who love it. I don't know if there's going to be enough people who love it to make it the huge hit that Ubisoft is hoping for. Right. But yeah, it's interesting, the irony of no Assassin's Creed, which is definitely the right thing to do long term by the players and for the company, because they haven't been able to renew the franchise. Putting them in an awkward position, especially given that Vivendi bid to basically take them over.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we'll see what happens there. And by the way, usually it's common in France that when a company tries to buy a successful French company, which Ubisoft is, the government might step in if it's a foreign company trying to get in. But in this case, Vivendi is, of course, a gigantic conglomerate, but it's French. So there's really nothing that the Guillemot brothers can do to sort of save themselves from the Vivendi ogre trying to eat them alive. It's pretty terrifying if you built your company from the ground up as they did.
Right.
Anyway, Microsoft is doing weird things with the Xbox. We heard that Quantum Break, that was a couple of weeks ago at least, Quantum Break was supposed to be an Xbox One exclusive, and we've now heard that not only is it going to be coming out on the PC as well, but it's going to be sold as a bundle with the Xbox One version for anyone who purchases it, I think pre-orders it. And there's also Alan Wake coming with it. It's, you know, the Xbox 360 title being available on Xbox One through backwards compatibility. So, and we've also heard that this might happen for other titles that are supposedly exclusive to the Xbox One too. We're hearing whisperings about even Gears of War and Scalebound.
And Recore
and stuff like that, which led a lot of people to believe that, first of all, there was a quote by Phil Spencer saying that the Xbox One and PC cross-buy will be a platform feature going forward. And there was a pretty good article in Business Insider explaining how the plan for the Xbox One for Microsoft is to make the Xbox platform kind of a service in the same way that Office 365 is a service. So you would just basically subscribe to Gold and it would be available everywhere and you could buy your games everywhere. It's an interesting strategy. What do you think about it? I have thoughts, but...
One of the things we're probably going to mention a little bit, but the PC release for Quantum Break is going to be on Steam. So that's something that, I mean, most PC gamers nowadays, that they play on Steam, and having something be not on Steam, being available through the Windows Store in this case, it does cause a problem for people that don't want to have such a fractured game library. I know I have trouble remembering, we were talking about Ubisoft earlier, but I have trouble remembering that I have games on Uplay because they're not on my Steam library, and I just don't have Uplay up all the time, you know? But I think it's probably a smart move. There have been people asking for all games that are coming out on Xbox One to come out on PC or Xbox in general for a long time. But I know there are a lot of people, myself included, that feel that they got a little bit riffed by the fact that they bought an Xbox One for the exclusives and now they're going to come to PC and they're probably going to look better and play better on PC, honestly, because Microsoft does know how to make good PC ports. The past couple of games that they've released for the PC have been excellent PC ports, so I'll probably end up getting them on PC.
Really?
I don't know.
Okay.
Assuming they come to Steam, I don't know. If they don't come to Steam, I probably won't. I Quantum Break, I still already have pre-ordered on Amazon, so it's coming. The Xbox version is coming to me, so we'll see.
Yeah, it becomes, at first I was biffed as well, for sure. I mean, I've mentioned on this show the release of Tomb Raider coming so quickly after the release. I mean, the PC release of Tomb Raider coming so quickly after the release of of the Xbox One. I was kind of, why did I buy my Xbox One again?
That's a good point, because I think the reason why the PC release came so quick after the Xbox One exclusive period was because it just did not sell well. It sold like, I don't remember the numbers. It was really, really low. I mean, they didn't publicly release the numbers. So maybe from Phil Spencer's side, he looks at those numbers and he goes, this exclusivity deal didn't really work out that well for us. So maybe we need to go ahead and put it on PC too. That way it's still on a Microsoft platform. So we're okay with that.
I'm guessing.
I don't know. Maybe Scalebound would not have sold very well if it was on an Xbox exclusive. But I know a lot of people that bought Xboxes simply because they knew Scalebound was coming out this year, but now it's been delayed to early 2017.
Delayed and not probably not Xbox exclusive. I mean, it's an interesting discussion for sure. Let me check. Tomb Raider, Rise of the Tomb Raider is available on Steam, right? Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
It is. And so the thing is, you mentioned the cross-platform thing is going to be on the Microsoft Store, the Windows Store. Even beyond that, it's going to be a Windows 10 only feature. So it kind of encourages people to upgrade as well. And I had a discussion with my good friend Daniel, who works at a big PC manufacturer. And he sort of mentioned, us who look at this and think, oh, well, it's on the PC as well, and I'm not, in that case, I don't care about my Xbox One. We're kind of a minority, PC gamers who also have Xbox Ones or, who consider consoles who have this choice. For a lot of people, a gaming PC is way too expensive anyway, and they might only have an Xbox One. Of course, there's a cross-section that is going to have both, but basically console gamers are often, probably not the people listening to this, but console gamers are often people who don't have a gaming PC, and their gaming machine is a console. So essentially, there is less of an impact on the market overall than we in this, hardcore gaming community think, because people are, anyway, those who have an Xbox One often usually are not going to have the choice of getting it on an, gaming PC. And it helps them with the pushing Windows 10 and their store as well. And for me, as I was saying, I was miffed initially, but when I'm looking at this and I'm thinking, well, I'm going to get the bundle, if I get it on Xbox One, I get the PC version anyway, and I'm going to get Alan Wake, which is always good to have. There's really no reason for me to be angry about this. And there's going to be cross save, just like on the PlayStation platform, you can, example, play on PS4 and then take the game on the Vita, and you can have the same save game if you have a Vita in a game that runs on the Vita, which is rare. I know. I have a Vita, so don't come after me. I mean, there's no downside. I struggle to see the downside. And taking this from Microsoft's point of view, they are lagging behind in terms of console sales. They're still selling like hotcakes, but, they're still, let's say, 25% behind in numbers of Xbox Ones compared to the PlayStation 4. But now, if you consider, since the architecture is so similar and you have, it's very easy to develop a game for a PC when you develop it for any console. Now, if it's available on the PC and on Xbox One, the installed base of devices that can run your game is sort of significantly expanded for developers who want to develop on Xbox One. So all of a sudden, you get from an installed base of, 20 to 30 million Xbox One versus 40 million PS4s to 40 million PS4s versus 25 million Xbox Ones, plus I don't know, millions and dozens of millions of PCs as well. So yeah. Might be a good move in the end to sort of prop the ecosystem up as a whole, rather than to just focus on the Xbox One. They don't do that in the computer market. They put their apps on every phone available, even if it's not Windows Phone. So here it might be worth it as well.
110 million Windows 10 installs right now.
I'm guessing October
6th. So
yeah. Not all of them are
gamers.
I think it's exactly. I think it's even higher now, but not all of them are gamers. So
yeah, for sure.
But still, let's say
that's still a big install base.
Exactly, and I think now it's like 200 million Windows 10. They've really got a pretty fast pace there. So let's say a fourth of those are gaming capable PCs. That's still 50 additional million. Let's say eighth of those. That's still 25 additional machines.
The reason that they don't want to put it on Steam is because they don't want to pay Steam's cut. So,
that's probably
the big reason they want to keep that 30% that Steam takes. So,
that's probably a good point. But I'm wondering if those 30% would be offset by the additional units they would sell. So I don't know.
Probably, but.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe on Steam it would be on any device, and they're using this to encourage people to switch to Windows 10 as well. Maybe it's going to end up being on Steam after a while, or who knows?
Yeah, I mean the Steam doesn't do a very good job of showing when a game is for specifically Windows 10 or anything like that. So I don't know.
Is that even possible on Steam? I thought if it was Windows, it was just Windows.
You can say further down on the page, it'll say like only for Windows 10 or something like that.
Oh, okay. So it would be possible too.
Yeah, I mean, I think if I remember correctly, I think there's probably something that it'll pop up, a big like warning will pop up and say this is only for Windows 10. Similar to when you play a game that only has controller support, it'll say like this game only supports use controls with a controller. So,
right. I didn't even know that there were such a thing as a game that was only available on Windows 10, aside from the upcoming Quantum Break. All right. So anyway, this is definitely an interesting move. There's a Microsoft gaming conference coming in a few days. So I would guess we're going to hear a little bit more about that at that point. So that's the general main pieces of information. I want to talk about Street Fighter V, but before that, let's read this iTunes review by KG Turnak. I almost said Turmac. He left us this review in the US store, and he says, "Great podcast, lively, passionate podcast about gaming. The host and his guests guest hosts provide well-rounded commentary about today's most popular, current and upcoming game. Thank you so much, KG Turnak. If you want to give us a little boost on the iTunes store, that would be very much appreciated. I'm not going to say 5-star reviews, although we like those the best, but just go to the store or to any other podcasting app that you use and give us a review. Giving more visibility is always a great thing because, podcasts, the one thing they suffer from is that it's kind of, we don't have channel surfing. So when people try to find a new podcast, many of you have probably found this show or probably others through iTunes by just looking for games. And when you get a good rating in there, it helps you resurface when people search for different podcasts on the topics they like. So if you want to do that, it would be greatly appreciated. So thank you very much in advance. And now, the moment I have all been waiting for, talking about Street Fighter V. So you told me you're not a Street Fighter gamer.
Nah, not really.
And you know that it's weird. I've seen that sentiment echoed throughout my timeline and the people who follow me and the people I follow. I know that there are lots of Street Fighter fans in the US, but it seems to me there are a lot less of you or us in the US than there are in Japan and Europe, probably. I'm guessing you're more of a Mortal Kombat person.
I'm actually not a fighting game person at all, so.
All right, well, that's your saving grace then, because I cannot abide people preferring Mortal Kombat to Street Fighter.
Nah, just the game style never really appealed to me, so.
Yeah, I understand that. It's kind of a, you know, in the 90s, the fighting games were really the hot thing. Early 90s, Street Fighter 2 came out, and maybe it was even late 80s. Can't remember. Anyway,
you don't want to know how old I am. So there's probably a reason why I'm not a fighting game person.
Exactly. Yeah. Notice how I'm purposely not asking. But yeah. So, but even then in the US, Mortal Kombat sort of got the bigger mind share. Maybe it's unfair for me to say that, but certainly nowadays, Mortal Kombat seems like it's more of a big deal when it comes out in the US than Street Fighter. And the reason I'm always a little bit, well, miffed, to use that term again, when people say they prefer Mortal Kombat is because even though Mortal Kombat is super fun and I bought the last one and I enjoyed it very much, as a fighting game, the thing that really matters. The most important aspect of a fighting game, I would say, is the competitive aspect. And Mortal Kombat is a fun game, but it's not as tight, as balanced, as serious, I'll even dare say, as Street Fighter. Street Fighter's gameplay is incredibly studied and minute and crafted so that it can be this incredibly, you know, it's the StarCraft of fighting games. And if you're going to be interested in a fighting game, it is fun too. It's not like it's not fun. Sure, you don't have the fatalities that are going to make you laugh because they take a guy's head out with his spine still attached. That's not going to happen in that game. But if you want to have an actual game where you can progress and get improve your skill, Street Fighter, I would say, is a lot more valid than almost any other game, but certainly more than Mortal Kombat.
Yeah, so, I mean, I've seen and heard, just from a purely technical perspective, people that are really, really high up in the skill level here, they know like how many frames a certain move will take and how many frames that their opponent has a chance to counteract their move. And it just the idea that like they know every single move down to the number of frames that it takes is just mind-boggling to me. I think it's really, really cool. So just from a, like I said, just from a purely technical perspective, I think that's really cool.
Yeah, and I mean, it certainly is. And Street Fighter 4 was very much going down that route. It was a game that you had to get insanely technical to appreciate and enjoy. And Street Fighter 5 has tried to get away from this a little bit, correct a lot of the, not mistakes, but design philosophies that meant Street Fighter 4 was sort of kept away from beginners and people who were new to the or wanting to come back to the series. I think Street Fighter V is a lot easier to approach. You don't have as much of this frame BS that you have to know, and certainly when you start, when you just begin, you really don't have to know any of this. And I think I've been playing it for almost a week now, and I think they've really succeeded in bringing it back to more of an approachable fighting game style. I would even say that to an extent it is, to keep comparisons with other types of games, it is sort of equivalent to Heroes of the Storm in comparisons to other MOBAs. It's a little bit more approachable. You have hit special moves that you can do relatively easily. It still requires some skill, but it's more approachable, certainly, I would say. So, I'm going to get to how much I enjoy the game in just a second, but we have to talk about the launch. I don't know if you've been following the issues that the game has had at launch, but there have been a few.
Just a few.
Basically, so there are a couple of things. First of all, the game's servers were completely borked for the first 2 days. Basically, it was unplayable. Or 85% unplayable. You would disconnect from the servers. It's always online. So yes, you could play offline if you wanted to and play against your friends locally. But even if you played through the single player experiences, it didn't count. It didn't amass you the experience and in-game currency that you would have gotten if you were online. And since the servers were not holding the connections, they would, you would go through parts of the single player story mode, and when you would get to the end, it would tell you, oh, I couldn't log to the servers, so I'm not going to count this for your experience and fight money. So
that's not good.
Yeah, that is not great. Same thing when you were trying to find an opponent. It would not find anyone to pit you against. It would take like 20 minutes to find a fight. When it would find one, out of half the time it would disconnect you either midway through or even before the fight would even begin. Servers completely borked for the first 2 days.
Fighting games in general need to have really good net code and really good server connectivity in order to even be remotely playable. So that's not good on Street Fighter's part.
For sure, especially since they've done so many beta tests. It seemed like the beta every other week in the weeks coming, before the launch. And the net code is good. I think the net code is not at fault, really. I haven't had any significant issues. It's still a game that you're going to play over the internet, so obviously there are going to be slight delays. But the net code itself, I think, is pretty good. The servers, I'm hoping that the reason why it was so problematic was they had a lot more people trying to get in than they thought, which I understand the frustration, but when you launch a game, it is very difficult to get the server capacity that you're going to need for the launch, because it's going to be so much higher when everyone is trying to connect at the same time than when you're going to be, in cruise mode and you're going to have people playing for the next few weeks and months. Obviously, you're not going to buy 10 times or, 3 times the servers you need for the duration of the game just to survive the first 2 days. It's going to be messed up.
Because there's been precedent set in the industry. Wildstar, I think it was, when they went free to play, they got like so many more people than they expected. So they released a cool little snippet on their blog basically saying, like, you know what we did? We ended up going to a virtualization farm and just spinning up a bunch of new servers, and it only took us about 5 minutes to do so. And then once they were all set up, then we flipped the switch, and then all of a sudden we had tripled the number of servers we had before. So I don't know whether it's, I mean, Capcom is a Japanese company, so maybe they're just not used to having to doing that kind of new technology. But the idea that you can just take your servers, clone them, turn them on, and then all of a sudden you have triple the servers, that's not too too far off what's easy to do nowadays.
Yeah, I'm guessing.
I mean, maybe all their servers are hard servers, so you can't really. It's hard for them to just go buy more parts and make new servers, but I think a lot of these issues that I hear can be solved from the outside looking in just by cloning all your servers to
I think it might have been the case for Wildstar. I'm not sure it would be the case for Street Fighter. I don't know how their infrastructure is set up. But it maybe, and maybe it was other issues. Now things have been resolved, kind of. They're almost okay. So I would suspect it might have been a combination of a lot of the different issues, possibly an influx of players and as well poor, engineering. But at the same time, I always have a hard time thinking the engineers that have been working on this for 4 years just didn't think, oh, we could just add servers, virtualize servers.
Yeah, I mean,
of course they're going to think about this. If they're not doing it, there must be a good reason behind it.
Yeah, I mean, it's not just the number of servers that could possibly caused this issue. It's the networking and stuff like that to get to those servers that could have been bogged down as well. So
and you know. They've been, I don't know what they've been fixing or if it's less people, obviously less than on the first day, but it's been getting a lot better during the day, during the week. It's fine. It's working perfectly. I played a little bit over the weekend. There were, let's say, one out of four games or five games that would end up crapping and not recording, which might have turned to my advantage a couple of times because I lost. but overall, the launch was definitely not great. Plus, there was the other issue of the fact that the game's content is really poor. I was talking about the story mode, and it's basically per character three rounds, and that's it. There's no arcade mode, which personally I'm not too miffed about. The arcade mode was sort of a remnant of the arcade days, which was sort of unnecessary. I really think it doesn't matter all that much nowadays. The story mode, I don't mind three rounds because I don't want, you know, stories in fighting games. It's really, it's really not. I mean, even Mortal Kombat 10, which had a fun multiple-hour storyline, it was kind of dumb. And that's not why I'm going to be playing fighting games. It's not even like, you know, in StarCraft, I'm going to play the story mode because it's actually fun and different. In fighting games, it's okay, but it's really not that clever, and the story isn't interesting. And anyway, but still, there's basically very little story mode. The main one is going to arrive in June with the cinematic story mode, which they've announced. There's no, even more problematic, there's no challenge mode, meaning there's no mode that will teach you the different combos for each of your characters. So it's really difficult to learn a new character. You can go in training mode and sort of try the different moves, but there's no mode that will teach you the basic combos, the basic moves, the basic, you know, all of that, which is basically the one thing I go to usually to learn the new characters. So really what that boils down to is they really should have delayed the game a couple of months. That's what it feels like. But they had their competitions and the Capcom Pro Tour and all of this, so they really needed the game to be out, but it's just not ready. It's half a game. It's completely half-baked. So that's kind of too bad, for sure. However... the half that is in the game, the half that is present, is fantastic. It's basically just multiplayer, you know, competitive aspect of the game. And it's just amazingly good. The game is super tight. When it works, when you don't have server issues, which are getting sort of less and less common, it's so much fun. I tweeted a couple of times. First of all, I tweeted I was very frustrated because I was losing all the time, which is to be expected when, you know, it's the first week or two of a new game. People are ranking up, and at first you're pitted against people that are a lot stronger than you. But now it's starting to settle down a little bit, and my matches are a lot more even. And I've tweeted it. It feels like I'm back in the arcades and, you know, having fun with different people, trying to figure out how to beat someone, but not really managing. And then they're going to do something crazy to me, and then I'm going to retort. You know, arcades. Have you ever had the experience of? I guess maybe you're too young, but
well, yes, I have had the experience of arcades when I was really, really young. But there's also a cool new thing popping up in the U.S. Arcade bars that you go and you play arcade games at a bar. That's pretty cool. Mm. But like the whole entire bar is basically, it's an arcade that they serve alcohol at it. So,
I could see that being successful.
Yeah. Especially in college towns, it's a big deal. So,
yeah. This is basically the fun of that without the alcohol or the noise, which me being a little bit older, I don't mind. But yeah, it's, I mean, it is more accessible. It's a lot more forgiving if you want to get your special moves out. It has special moves that are a lot easier to do. It's just the Street Fighter experience I had been waiting for, and that I couldn't get with Street Fighter 4 because it was too technical, as you were saying. Mm-hmm. It had all of this history behind it. I don't think I can recommend it to anyone quite yet. There's a big update coming in March that is going to have the first character that you can purchase and a bunch of other things, other modes, including the challenge mode with those combos. But I think by that time, I would really recommend it to anyone because it's just the purest fun of fighting games you can have. And whether you want to play online, if you're a little bit serious about it, or you want to play with friends, I guarantee you, you're going to have more fun long run with a Street Fighter game than you are with a Mortal Kombat game. Street Fighter is going to provide you with so much more opportunity to improve, you learn new characters, you know, fight your friends and get better. And that is something that I would definitely recommend in March when the first update arrives. We have to mention as well the business model for just a second. You're going to be able to purchase new characters when they come out. There's going to be one a month for the next few months. It seems like you can buy them relatively easily. The single player portions of the game are going to provide you with a decent amount of in-game currency. And it seems like at least two, maybe three of the new characters are going to be, you're going to gain enough in-game currency to buy, yeah, at least two, maybe three of those characters relatively easily, at least two for sure. And there are six planned until September. So it seems to me like it's a decent business model. I've heard some people complaining that they're basically milking you on both fronts, making you pay for the game and then selling additional characters. But I don't think the comparison to free-to-play games is fair, because with the game that you purchase, you're getting 16 characters to begin with. So you have a fully functional game already. So I don't know where you fall on that. Do you think that business model is unfair? Or?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think that every game has the right to choose a business model that's best for the company in order to make it be successful. So as long as it's not too jarring, then I think whatever they do is fine.
Right. Yeah, and I think in this case it isn't too jarring. You go through, let's say, six or seven single-player campaigns, which are, again, three rounds, and you have enough money to buy a character. Maybe you need, I don't know, eight single-player campaigns. So that's perfectly okay to me. Final question. Do you know who Lupe Fiasco is?
I've heard about this.
You have?
So I didn't know when I saw this in the notes. I remember hearing about this, but the guy, he beat one of the top Street Fighter V players.
Yeah, that was pretty insane. So maybe you haven't heard of Daigo Umehara, but maybe you've seen that video that keeps being resurrected every time someone says anything about Street Fighter. It's called Evo Moment 32, I think, or 42, can't remember. That game where it was at Street Fighter 3 at the time, it was in 2004, and there's a clutch ending of a game where one character goes and rushes the other, who almost has no life left, and he does a series of kicks that are special kicks that should eat away at the little bit of remaining life they have. Have you seen that clip or not?
I have not.
Okay, so you really aren't into fighting games. That is the moment where Daigo, instead of just parrying, going backwards to parry, or, you know, to defend, which would have cost him the game because the chip damage would have killed him, he went and pushed forward like 14 or 15 different times to parry actively each of the kicks of the super that was unleashed against him. And he did that 15 times at the right timing and then jumped and did a massive combo that killed his opponent. Anyway, that was what made Daigo the most famous. He is an insanely good player. He's always been at the top of the rankings. And Lupe Fiasco is a rapper, an American rapper I hadn't heard about, but he's fairly well known. He has 1.5 million followers on Twitter, I think. And it turns out he's a gaming fan and a fighting game fan. And he had been playfully talking trash to Daigo, saying that he would, go against him in Street Fighter V when the game came out. And they did a show match out of it. And actually, he beat him, which was hilarious because Daigo is known for never, being kind to anyone. He's super cold-hearted and he never, gives you an inch. So he, Lupe Fiasco actually winning, you have to watch the clip. It's super funny. By the end of the third match, neither of them realized that the game is actually over. And they're like, okay, so when's the next game? And they start thinking, wait, that was three? I won? And Fiasco is like, he's bowing to Daigo. Anyway, it's the kind of, that's kind of why I love fighting games. I love lots of different types of games, but fighting games especially, it's kind of really, it's visceral. It's you against another person. You can only rely on your wits and reflexes and capacity and skill. And there are lots of games that do that, but not in the same way. I mean, a StarCraft game is going to last super long. It's more difficult to understand. MOBA is obviously teams. Same thing for FPSs. Fighting games are kind of unique in that space. And I really hope that Street Fighter V sort of brings fighting games even more into the limelight of esports. So that's my love for Street Fighter V sort of displayed for all to see.
Watching the tail end of the match right now.
Yeah.
It was close.
Yeah.
Holy cow. Awesome.
So anyway, if you look, if you Google Lupe Fiasco, you'll find it. Lupe Fiasco and Street Fighter V. In other fighting game news, the King of Fighters 14 is still showing more of its roster, and it added the King of Dinosaurs. Which, what? Never mind. We also have other characters. If you like fighting games, King of Fighters is a close second to Street Fighter in the heart of real fighting game players. And I'm so happy that this game is coming out as well towards the end of the year. But it's looking a little bit better than it did, but it's really gameplay that makes it what it is. The Division, we mentioned it just a little bit earlier. I can't remember if I mentioned I played the beta. Maybe I did.
You played the first few missions, yeah.
Right. And I'm curious. We'll see. I'm definitely going to be, well, I think I'm going to be playing it, but I'm going to wait for the reviews. And it seems to me like I fear it's a little bit generic. That's my fear.
But yeah, I mean, that's what I was mentioning earlier, too. So
Yeah. And so when I played it, one thing that struck me was, holy crap, the UI is confusing. It is extremely confusing. And you're thrown into the whole thing, and you don't really know what thing does what. I mean, that's... Anyway... It was definitely something that I wasn't expecting for this game. What else? Firewatch. Have you played Firewatch?
Played the first hour of it.
What did you think?
I thought it was really, really good. I think the introduction little area where you're walking through the signs and kind of making your choices for your kind of like past life cool and and interesting, and then just the little bit of the touch of the voice acting and environment stuff that I've gotten. It's a beautiful game, and I'm looking forward to playing more of it.
So basically, I was exactly where you were a few days ago. I thought it was incredibly well written. It is honestly that intro scene, it's a bunch of text boards with a couple of choices, and there must be what, 15 of them? That's it.
Yeah, but you're surprisingly engaged in them as you as you go through and make your choices.
It is. I think it's some of the best writing I've ever seen anywhere. Those first 10 minutes, it's mind-blowing how much they engage you in this thing with just a little bit of text and a couple of choices. Sometimes there aren't even choices. You just have to press to confirm that this is the action you do, and they're just telling you. The writing during the game itself is also phenomenal. It's also incredibly well acted. So that first hour, I was amazed. The game is about, let's say, 5 to 6 hours long. I think it's ultimately disappointing because, again, without spoiling, I think it ends up not living up to the setups that it sets up.
Did you play Gone Home?
And I loved it.
Okay, so what about Firewatch is disappointing for having a bunch of setup and not following through with it compared to Gone Home? Because I felt like Gone Home did that, where you felt like you were it was trying to tell one kind of story and it ended up not being that story at all.
I think ultimately in Gone Home, the conclusion is satisfying and sort of fits with the rest of the game. It explains everything, if it doesn't explain it in the way you thought it would.
Right.
I don't think Firewatch does that. I think the ending falls flat a little bit. Okay. And that sort of sullies it ended up making me feel like the devs had cheated me a little bit.
Oh, interesting.
And in a game which is basically a walking simulator, when the story is the only thing you have to go by, along with the art, but, you know, mainly the story, that is kind of an important flaw, I think.
So the ending has disappointed you, but do you find that the journey itself to get to the ending is satisfying?
Yes. Okay. but not enough that it makes me... for me, at least, again, this is a very personal thing. I think everyone is going to have a different appreciation of it. But for me, it wasn't so satisfying that it made me think the game was the journey was not self-sufficient for me. It needed that ending that would bring it all together to make me appreciate it enough to sort of recommend it. At this stage, maybe I'm going to think on it and change my opinion later, but at this stage, I wouldn't recommend the game. I would definitely recommend, if you're interested in game design, that you go through the first hour because it's phenomenal writing, as we were saying. But actually, even if you're into storytelling, those first 10 minutes are brilliant. But as a game as a whole, I don't know that I would. Yeah, it wasn't satisfying for me. I don't want to spoil, so I'm not going to say anything.
Yeah. I mean, I still plan on finishing it and hope, and maybe my opinion of it will be different from yours.
Well, let me know. Let me know when you do, because it's, as you know, it's definitely a personal thing. So I would be very curious to hear what you and what other people, you know, if you're a listener and you've enjoyed it, please let me know why. And if you haven't, let me know why on Twitter at NotPatrick. Very curious to hear what you have to say. Fallout 4 is the game of the year for the DICE Academy. DICE is kind of the sort of the equivalent of the Oscars. It's not as well known, but it's organized by the Academy of Interactive Arts and Sciences. So yeah, it's the most respectable of the award shows for video games out there. Fallout 4 got Game of the Year, not a big surprise. The usual suspects are there for most of the categories. You're going to have action game is Star Wars, fighting game Mortal Kombat, Street Fighter V wasn't out yet, so I'm guessing next year it's going to be Street Fighter V.
Family game, of course.
Well, you know, it's the big game for this year. Family game of the year, Super Mario Maker. Mobile game, Fallout Shelter, blah, blah, blah. There's a bunch of them. The one that I sort of noticed is the strategy slash simulation game of the year going to Heroes of the Storm, which... I'm super happy that Heroes of the Storm is getting recognized. Especially, you know, I'm a new convert. For the past 3 months, I've fallen in love with Heroes of the Storm. But I fail to see how it's a strategy slash simulation game. Am I missing something?
I mean, maybe they're leveraging the fact that you kind of strategize with your teammates about which way to like make choices and stuff. I mean it's made from the StarCraft 2 engine, right? So it's a little strategy.
StarCraft is real-time strategy for sure. I mean simulation certainly not. Strategy, I guess, maybe. But
if you look at the past year, it was awarded to Hearthstone, the simulation
Yeah. Well, so I see Hearthstone being a strategy game. Mm-hmm. I think to me it's a strategy game with the, you know, it's StarCraft without the twitchiness. So I can see that there's definitely strategy involved. The amount of strategy in Heroes, there is some, but it's a lot more action to me than strategy. There's some strategy, I guess, but anyway, it's a small quip. It's a small thing I have with the name. I'm just overall, I'm mostly happy that that Heroes is getting some love because it's definitely an awesome game. Bethesda apparently has three big projects in the works. That was a surprise to me.
So I saw that they were going to have another E3 conference this year, and I was a little concerned because last year's E3 conference was so focused around Fallout 4. But it's interesting to me because they're going to have Dishonored 2, which is supposed to come out later this year. And they have Doom, which is supposed to come out in the next couple months. So I was wondering how they were going to fill that time. But if they have three different new projects, I think that's really cool. I was listening to someone that was saying that maybe they're going to go for something other than Elder Scrolls or Fallout, as far as like an environment. So maybe they'll go somewhere in the future, like sci-fi kind of area, which would be really cool with their same established like way of storytelling and world building and stuff like that. So I'm interested in seeing what they'll do. So I'm hoping it'll be cool.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think everyone would like the Elder Scrolls to come out, but I don't think that's going to be happening this year. But it's a good point about the E3 conference. They must have definitely big things that they're going to be presenting there. It can't be just Dishonored 2, although that
or just Fallout DLC,
or just yeah, for sure. But yeah, to quote that was Todd Howard speaking at DICE. He was saying we actually have three longer term projects that are all, we'll talk about them at a much future date. They're different from anything we've done before, while also being a Bethesda-style game, big and crazy. And he added, but in many ways different from what we've done before. That was in the article from Polygon on the topic. So, yeah, I'm curious to see what Bethesda does, because they're definitely... they have an opportunity to become a bigger player than they've been in the past. There's sort of this second... tier awesome game developer, but they're not quite at the level of the big publishers like, you know, mm-hmm. EA, Activision, Blizzard, Valve, Ubisoft. But they're gaining enough love now that I'm wondering if they wouldn't have an opportunity, if they thought a little bit outside the box, to get a kind of a level up. So
yeah, I mean, if they go out, I mean, EA is not going to be at E3 this year. They made that announcement a few weeks ago.
Well, so, they're going to have a presentation before, you know, around it. They're not going to be on the show floor, but
they're not going to be on the show floor, and they're not going to have a press conference at E3. They're going to be doing something different.
Yeah, just like Nintendo does, though. So that's
right.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see if Bethesda can fill into that hole left by EA. And if they have three new projects in the works, then I think that's pretty likely.
Yeah. Would be definitely, it's definitely an opportunity for them to do something. And we'll see what that something is. The HTC Vive has a price, and it's not a low price. $800 basically. It's a leak, but it's pretty much a confirmed leak. $800, that's $200 more than the Oculus headset, the Oculus Rift. Oh my God, I forgot the name. So, what do you think about that?
Comes with two controllers, one for each hand, two base stations to track the user's movement, and the bundled with two games, Job Simulator and Fantastic Contraption. So is that worth $200? I don't know. But I think these market items, first in the market, are going to be high ticket items and for early adopters only. So I'm willing to just kind of take a step back and wait and see which one kind of works out the best and maybe get it on a good sale or something like that. But it's a little pricey for what I'm willing to pay for right now. So we'll see.
Yeah, it's a bit too pricey for me as well. And you're right to mention the controllers, because the price for the Oculus does not include the touch controllers, which are only going to be available later this year. And I would bet they're going to be at least $50 each, at least.
Yeah.
So it's not quite $200 more, because you get a little bit more with it. It's still, you know, the price you have to pay if you want to get one. But yeah, it's not that surprising. I think the bigger unexpected trend is that all of these headsets seem to be well upwards of the $500 mark, which I don't think, thinking of it last year, we didn't realize it was going to be the case.
Yeah. I don't know. So, do you think that the PlayStation VR headset will be around the same price as Oculus, or do you
think
less?
I think it's going to be cheaper. I don't know if it's going to be, you know, how it's going to work out with the PlayStation Move controllers that you're going to need for it as well. You know, the Move and the PlayStation Eye, I believe, is needed as well. So that's the camera that
you use. I think that the camera that they use is actually a different thing. I don't know. When I saw it at PAX, it was a different camera than the PlayStation Eye that I'm used to seeing. So. Okay. And I didn't use the Move controller when I played with it. So you can use a regular controller. It just depends on the game.
True. So I definitely think that the PlayStation VR is going to be, I definitely think it's going to be sub 500. I think it's going to be sub 400.
Do you think the quality will be the same as what we're potentially going to get out of Vive or Oculus Rift? Or
absolutely not. it's going to be a lesser technical device, but I strongly believe it is going to be good enough to deliver the kind of experience that is going to be interesting to people and gamers. Having tried one myself, there is no noticeable lag between your head movement and the it. And that is the most important thing. And yes, the screen is not as high resolution. You can kind of see the pixels, and the PlayStation 4 itself is less powerful than a big PC. So yes, it's not going to be as pretty, but it's going to be half the price. And I think given the install base of the,
I was just about to say the same thing. The install base of PlayStation 4 is so high that if Sony comes out with a cheaper alternative to these headsets, which already cost a lot, plus in addition the cost of having a powerful PC, which we mentioned earlier isn't as prevalent in the marketplace, I think they have a chance to really be a leader in this market.
Yeah, for sure. And GameStop, by the way, it was the CEO who said he thought, or, you know, he might have misspoken, or we don't know. It might have been a whoops or just his estimation, that the PlayStation VR, which will be available at GameStop this fall. Now, again, we don't know what that means. It might be that it's available somewhere else before. It might be that his thinking that it's going to be available this fall. It might be that the PlayStation VR headset, which is supposedly going to come out in the first half of the year has been delayed to the fall. Very possible. So we don't know. But given the state of VR right now, I think they can take a couple of extra months and make it a big release in the fall and make it sort of a hot, hotter holiday gift for PlayStation owners.
Yeah.
I could see that happening. Have you created your Nintendo account?
I have. It's awesome. I mean, I don't know. I just put in my Nintendo Network ID and password, and then I was created my Nintendo account. So there wasn't much to it. Yeah.
I also rushed to do it just because, you know, you're going to want to have your Nintendo account ready for whatever happens next. But yeah, they're slowly rolling out their new online system, and that's good. There's no need to rush in and reserve your gamer name or tag or nickname or whatever. You can have multiple of each name, which, by the way, every single company and network in the world should do. Just allow everyone to have whatever name they want and do like normal people do, normal network engineers do, and have a, you know, addition to the name that makes it unique. Like on Battle.net, you have the hash, the hashtag and the number afterwards. That's it. It's insane that if you go in and your name is taken, you have to add, you know, 01 or use a stupid name instead. Anyway,
I mean, with a name like Patrick, do you usually go with Patrick on your thing, or do you not Patrick?
No, I do is not that, Patrick. But
is that common?
So that's the thing. I wouldn't think that not Patrick is a common name, but sometimes I show up and it's already taken. And I don't understand. Is it people who just want to fuck with me and just take my name, or is it just people who randomly decide they want to be called not Patrick? I don't know, but it's not a big deal, but you know, it's just frustrating sometimes to not be able to have your own name. So yeah. I hope that in the future everyone will do things like that. Good on Nintendo, anyway. There's one last article I wanted to mention. Let me add a couple of bits of news. You mentioned the fact that there's going to be three add-ons for Fallout coming later, and they upped the season pass price, by the way.
Not yet, right?
It hasn't. It's coming. Yeah,
it's gone through yet. But they did say they were going to up it from $30 to $50. So people that want to get in on the lock in the $30 season pass should get on that sooner rather than later.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's interesting. It might be that they're delivering more content, but it might also be that they figured, holy crap, we sold so many Fallout 4. Let's just get the price up a little bit to make more money out of it, which good on them. And especially if they're, you know, since they're being upfront about it and telling you just get it now if you want it, because long term it's going to be more expensive. So
yeah, I mean, season passes don't usually go on sale as much as base games do. So this is basically saying I want this at 20% off,
yeah,
or 40% off. Yeah.
The other thing is, if you're a fan of MOBAs and of 3D MOBAs in general, Smite is coming to PlayStation 4, apparently. So that is going to be good for you if you like Smite and you have a PlayStation. I've tried it. I didn't get sucked into it. But if you're into MOBAs and you want one on your PlayStation, there you go. There's Paragon, which I'm more and more excited about, actually. It seems it's, you know, the Epic one that mm-hmm. uses the Unreal Engine. It's incredibly beautiful.
Is that Paragon or Paladins?
Oh, no, Paragon. Paladins okay. is Gearbox. Right. And yeah, I've tried that one. I've played a few hours. I was unconvinced. A bunch of gameplay issues that prevented me from enjoying it all that much, not the least of which was infinite ammo on every right. character.
Paladins is the one from the tribes.
Right.
The people that make tribes. And then the one, Battleborn, is the Gearbox one.
Oh, sorry. Okay, yes. Yeah. Battleborn, Paragon, which is yet another one. Holy crap.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot.
Yeah, and actually a symptom of that enormous amounts of hero MOBA brawlers shooter things is apparently Gigantic is having huge issues. Gigantic was looking pretty good. It's a first person or third person MOBA that was being developed for the Xbox One and PC, I believe. The company, I can't remember the name of that company. Sorry, I'll look it up. But apparently they're in deep trouble financially. They're having to Bottega, yeah, thank you. They're having to lay off temporarily, hopefully, a bunch of people. But I think that's just, I think it might be a consequence of the fact that there's, you know, everyone and their mother is now doing a MOBA shooter.
And well, I think it's also just the fact that that game was a big presence at PAX South last year, and it was a decent presence this year, but not nearly as big. But I just think that they haven't come out with the game yet, so it's just taking longer than they expected. So
yeah, well, it looked good, so I'm really hoping they can manage to get something together somehow.
It does have a different twist on it. Instead of just everyone shooting at each other, you're defending kind of... It's pretty much just like defending the payload in Overwatch. So, but you're defending a big monster that's you're trying to basically escort from one end of the map to the other. Right. But the monster can fight for you. So,
yeah, it's. I mean, there's lots of interesting things happening in that space. Certainly, people have heard how much in love I am with Overwatch. Mm-hmm. And yeah, anyway, we'll see how these things evolve. But I was looking forward to trying Gigantic, so I'm a little.
I don't
want
to speak too highly of other hero MOBAs, just in case Blizzard hears and they're like, "Oh, that guy doesn't need an invite to the Overwatch." Bit. So it's fine.
I wish everyone had an invite to the Overwatch beta. I think I'm at, I must be at 35 or 40 hours played. I played
the entire weekend that I was in. I played like probably a good 16 to 20 hours that weekend. So I don't know why they didn't think it was good to invite me back. But
I don't know.
It's fine.
I've advocated for you, just so you know.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that.
In my mind. But if you want more info about Overwatch, of course, don't miss Overwatchers, the show I do with my good friend Garrett Weinsroll on amove.tv. Overwatchers is going to be recording in a couple of days, the next episode. We're going to have a bunch of information about the beta and the nerfs and the buffs and everything that's been happening and how much we're enjoying the game and what we're enjoying in the game. So Overwatchers, listen to it often and early. And finally, the one story I wanted to mention, which really piqued my interest as a geek and as a gamer, as a lover of video games in general and comics, was that story on Polygon titled "Why Hollywood is Looking to Video Games as its Post-Comic Goldmine." Essentially, I'm going to summarize it for you. It says that Hollywood has made a lot of money making comic book movies well, and it's sort of the hotness, as we all know nowadays. And it seems like they might be looking at video games to sort of take up that mantle of the new hot thing and looking at them in the proper way, finally. Maybe... doing things, taking the medium and the source material seriously and adapting it with people who know what the hell they're talking about, instead of just cranking out some crap for children that has nothing to do with the actual game it's taken from. So I think that makes sense. Certainly Hollywood is always looking for the next hot thing, and certainly comic books are, you know, very successful in their adaptations to movies nowadays. So I would be very excited if that ended up being a trend. We have a very hotly anticipated video game movie coming out with Warcraft. But even after that, there might be others. There's Uncharted.
Assassin's Creed.
Assassin's Creed, you're right. There's even Five Nights at Freddy's that's been optioned, apparently. So
I wouldn't be surprised if we find, I don't know, because in the comic book movies, it was comic book movies first, and then a series came out. So, but I'd be curious to see, especially with Activision Blizzard spinning off their new development house for video content. I wonder if we're going to see TV shows be more prevalent than movies first.
I think a movie is an easier thing to make self-contained nowadays. Mm-hmm. If you want to do a TV show, it's going to become maybe not more expensive, but it's a little bit more difficult to develop a coherent, high quality product. It feels to me that way anyway. A movie, you have a beginning, an end, and that's it. For a TV show, I don't see as many high quality. Basically, I don't like comic book adaptations, TV show adaptations of comic books. I think many of them are subpar. Some of them are okay.
You don't like Daredevil?
No, Daredevil, yes. If Netflix is in, yes, please. I want
that. That's a comic book TV show.
You're right. Daredevil and Jessica Jones were fantastic.
Yeah.
I agree. I think what the WBWC does...
The CW.
There you go. The CW. I know that a lot of people love the Arrow and...
Flash is so good.
The Flash. And Flash, maybe I should give it another chance, but it just didn't... I watched a couple of episodes and it felt... teen TV movie
So season one of the Arrow does have some of those. Season two of the Arrow was fantastic. So season three and season four have been kind of touch and go for me, but I fell in love with the Flash as soon as it started, and I continue to love it every single time I watch it.
Okay. I know that some people are going to be angry at me for saying this, but I've seen only a few episodes of The Flash, but it didn't seem to me that it was very different from every other comic TV show I've seen on that channel. You know, I've watched a lot of Smallville. I thought that show was really fun, but it was still teenage bullcrap, you know? And I don't mean that in the sense of the movie featured teenagers, because of the movie, the TV show featured teenagers. I thought it was a lot of very good looking people worrying about high school and how they're going to manage, doing their superhero stuff and being popular or not popular in high school, as the case may be, because they're geeks, you know, and there's the science guy and there's the pretty one and there's the cheerleader. And it sounds silly to say this, but it doesn't feel like it's real life. It feels like it's very marketingly targeted at a certain age demo, which is high schoolers in America, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the what you said can apply a lot more to Arrow than the Flash. I think a lot of the stuff that you're concerned about does happen in the Flash, but I think that it kind of dies down pretty quickly, and it focuses more on the characters and kind of the people that are surrounding Barry as a support team. So,
all right. Well, you know what? Maybe I need to give it another chance. I will, however, ask you this very important question.
Okay.
How do you think the Flash rates in regards to Daredevil?
Oh, not even close.
Okay. All right. So that's, I think we're okay. We're in agreement then, because.
Oh yeah, absolutely not.
All right. All right. So that's more of what I'm looking for. You know, Daredevil, the Daredevil.
Well, you're going to get Daredevil season two in about a month. So
that I can't
look forward to that.
And I hope we get the same kind of quality video game related adaptations sometime soon. And maybe we're going to, because Hollywood is looking for more stuff. So,
yeah.
All right, I think that is going to be it for the show today. Before we leave, though, of course, please, Ed, let us know where we can find your internet antics.
Yeah, well, you can follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/Adesis. I stream usually once a week. The night kind of varies on 4Player Network's Twitch channel, twitch.tv/4playerpodcast, or just 4pp.tv. I also work behind the scenes. I'm working on their website, so there's a lot of cool things that are coming down the pipe for that as well. So you can find me there.
And are the guys at 4Player Network going to be doing something about Street Fighter?
No.
All right, then your mission is to convince them that Street Fighter should be, they should spend an evening playing it and streaming it.
And I will point them to your glowing reviews on this podcast as evidence to why they should play the game.
All right, excellent. For me, it is Not Patrick on Twitter and on Facebook. You can also find the show on frenchspin.com, where you can comment and find links to a bunch of stuff I do, including the Phileas Club, which is another show I do in English, where we talk about stuff that happened in the world with people who live in different parts of the world. It's incredibly international. And of course, please go to amove.tv to find Overwatchers if you're interested in that fantastic game called Overwatch. And that's going to be it for us. We will be back in a couple of weeks with another show. I hope until then you have a wonderful time in Street Fighter 5. Bye.
Or Firewatch.